Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, June 9th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt puts freeze on new vacation rentals. Men share terrifying experience after being attacked by two dogs in Blue Lake. And Biofuel Watch's Gary Graham Hughes says Humboldt County is entangled in a climate suicide project. Stay tuned. News on those stories coming right up. A moratorium on new short-term rentals is in place in Humboldt County, but a moratorium on off-site signs and billboards failed to get enough support from the Board of Supervisors. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors has approved a moratorium on vacation rentals, but a freeze on off-premises signs and billboards failed to get enough votes. The dilemma of how to control anticipated onrushes of permit applications ahead of new ordinances controlling the two uses was addressed at the June 6th Board of Supervisors meeting. The county is developing a new ordinance on permitting short-term rentals, referred to as STRs, as about 1,000 of them now operate in county areas. Although some pay hotel bed taxes, they're unregulated and controversial. There have been complaints about them from neighbors, and they're seen as a factor limiting housing supply. But Supervisor Michelle Bushnell views them as a way for property owners to draw income from homes that would otherwise be empty. In this exchange between Planning Director John Ford and Bushnell, the new ordinance's provisions and effects were discussed.
It does include a cap, for sure. Mm-hmm. And other jurisdictions have given deference to existing short-term rental operators. Mm-hmm. And I think what some of the jurisdictions have found is that people have wanted to position themselves to be an existing operator, and so have rushed to open a short-term rental, and it's resulted in a proliferation of the short-term rentals.
So beyond
what we're seeing right now.
So without an ordinance, though, so let me ask this then. Without an ordinance, what would you anticipate would happen with the current short-term rentals that are operating?
Well, we do not proactively go out and search for short-term rentals. Mm-hmm. We are complaint-driven. And frankly, not a week goes by that we're not dealing with a struggle with a short-term rental because the neighbors are complaining about it.
So maybe I phrased that wrong. How do you anticipate dealing with the 1,000 or so short-term rentals that we have right now when an ordinance is put in place?
Well, we're going to receive a glut of applications, and it will really depend on what this process results in terms of how complicated the process is.
Ford added that the ordinance being developed doesn't include a preference for existing STRs, but he said, quote, "I would imagine that there would be a strong lobby to include that in the ordinance." Bushnell said the STR situation is unique in Southern Humboldt.
In the Willow Creek area and the Southern Humboldt area currently, there are vacancies where there never were in the past because of what's going on with the cultivation scene. I know in Southern Humboldt specifically, there are so many empty homes, apartments, and so forth right now. And in certain areas such as Shelter Cove, that's not a prime area to seek housing for having a job. It's a very long commute, and people don't usually live out there that are going to commute to town to work or whatever. So I'm curious, when we say there's no ordinance but it's illegal, but we take their money for TOT, and so I don't get it, and I don't want to impose a moratorium on something that I feel some people are going to trend that way in the Southern Humboldt area and possibly the Willow Creek area to try to save their homes.
Ford said that existing STRs will be allowed to continue, and how to handle them will be sorted out after the ordinance is adopted. Bushnell was the only supervisor to vote against the moratorium. Supervisors also took up a proposed moratorium on off-site signs and billboards. It failed to get a required 4/5 majority. The three-vote majority opinion is based on concerns about the impacts of signs, as explained by Supervisor Natalie Arroyo.
There's always abundant comment whenever these matters come up from people who don't want to see the signs, who find them distracting, who think that it's visual blight, who, you know, have concerns about illumination affecting all manner of things, wildlife, and there is something to be said for the unique and beautiful character of this place. So I hear that and respect that, and there are many ways to advertise these days.
But Bushnell and Supervisor Rex Bone didn't see a need for a moratorium due to very low demand for permits. They voted against it, which left the vote falling short of the required threshold. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
On Wednesday, June 7th, emergency dispatchers sent medical personnel to a reported dog attack near the corner of Greenwood and First Avenue in Blue Lake. According to the dispatcher, the reporting party stated two individuals had been mauled by a dog. KMUD News was able to speak with the two victims, who shared their harrowing experience, which began when Neil Michalinka was walking past the house where the dogs were located after picking up his mail from the Blue Lake Post Office on the corner of First Avenue and G Street.
I was walking home from the post office by the house. The dogs ran up to the fence, barking and jumping. I continued to walk and eventually reached the gate. The gate was either unlatchable or not latched. The dogs came out of the gate and immediately came up to me aggressively, and I tried to yell at them and tell them to go away. It didn't work. They kept coming towards me, and then I decided to try to kick one to, you know, maybe scare them, but that did not work. They both basically came at me. One was more aggressive than the other one. I tried to retreat, but fell over because the dogs were at my feet. And then basically they both jumped on me and were biting me while I was on the ground trying to hit them and protect my vital areas.
Neil, a fit 47-year-old who stands 5 foot 11 inches, weighing 175 pounds, worries what would have happened if the dogs had attacked someone other than him.
If it was a kid or an elderly person, they would probably be potentially dead at this point, in my opinion.
Right.
You know, I was able to get a couple of blows and kicks in and fend them off somewhat, but when there's two of them, it was pretty much futile.
Even though Neil is physically fit and actively fought the dogs off, he was in serious trouble until nearby construction worker Steve Marai saw what was happening and came to his aid.
Basically, I was in a dump truck in the intersection a half a block away from Neil. Basically, Neil walked by the house and the dogs came out. And before I knew it, they had him on the ground in the middle of the street. And just going at him. So I ran down. His shoe, they ended up taking his shoe off. So I took his shoe basically from the ground and proceeded to beat on him. And God, didn't even affect him. So he ended up getting, they turned their concentration on me. They ended up getting me on the ground. They bit him in the neck. Then they turned on me and, you know, several other people finally involved, and one guy ended up, the dog had a harness with a handle on its back and ended up grabbing it, pulling it away. And I ended up getting bit in the thumb, took the tip of my thumb, basically folded it open. I mean, he walked by, I watched him walk by the house. I mean, he was minding his own business. He had just got his mail at the post office. The dogs didn't just come out and bite him. The dogs attacked him. And they weren't stopping.
Due to Steve's intervention, Neil, badly injured, was able to get away.
I was eventually able to get away from the scene because the construction workers were thrashing and beating the dogs. And then I ran about 20 yards away, and they continued to fight with the dogs for an unknown amount of time. And one of them fell to the ground and got bit in the hand. And then I think one of the owners came out of the house to help secure the animal.
Steve said he didn't really think. He just saw that someone was in need and stepped in.
The guy needed help, no matter what I could do. I mean, I knew he needed help. And everybody else. It's not just me. And I'm no hero. There's plenty of other people that jumped in after me. I did what I had to do, and I would hope somebody would do it for me. The dogs would have wore him down and would have killed him. I truly believe they would have killed him.
Both men described the attack similarly.
They were short and very strong and very aggressive, and I don't know if they were trained for that, but it was within their ability to go for my neck and sensitive areas and not be called off by the other people that were there.
They didn't want nothing to do with biting me in the legs. They wanted to bite my neck, my face, and basically that's how I ended up with my thumb the way it is pushing them back. It's crazy. I hope to never have to go through anything like that or see anything like that again. I mean, I'm a dog lover. Don't get me wrong. I love dogs. I have dogs. But these dogs were out to kill. I truly believe they were out to kill.
Neil said the ordeal was terrifying, uncertain if he would survive when one of the dogs had him by the neck.
When the dog was on my neck, I thought I was going to die. And then when it was kind of above me, between, you know, over my stomach and groin, I thought also I was terrified.
Other workers from the paving project nearby came to the aid of Neil and then Steve, which Neil said most likely changed the outcome of the harrowing attack.
It was the complete impact of keeping me up, serious life-threatening injuries, because I was, you know, I was injured and on the ground being attacked with no end in sight, and when they came over, it took a pretty good amount of effort for them to divert the attack to them and allow me to get away.
Both men, strangers before the incident, were transported to a local hospital due to their injuries. Steve suffered a deep laceration to the tip of his thumb while defending himself on the ground. Neil's injuries were much worse.
14 puncture wounds, some to the neck, arms, legs, and the groin area, and then some random bruises and scrapes from the, you know, rolling around on the ground, and then some, you know, swelling from the force of the dog's grip on my neck and extremities.
Released from the hospital, both men are undergoing a rabies protocol due to the attack. Neil, recovering at home, said he is unsure at this point if there will be any lasting damages. He did visit the construction site the day after the attack to thank Steve and the others that intervened and likely saved him from further damage or worse. Steve said that Neil is a great guy.
I got a new friend.
Both dogs were taken by Humboldt County Animal Control officers. They are currently under quarantine. A hearing will be held to determine the fate of the animals. Steve stated he would be at the hearing as he feels passionately that the dogs should not be returned to their owners, expressing concern that the dogs could have done irreparable damage or death to a child.
If it would have been a child, I don't think we'd have been there fast enough, because the child wouldn't have been able to fight these dogs off.
We will continue to follow the situation as it develops. Longtime Southern Humboldt environmental advocate Gary Graham Hughes says Supervisor Rex Bone has Humboldt County involved in a, quote, climate suicide wood pellet export scheme, end quote, through a project that would build two biomass wood pellet plants in Tulum and Lassen counties that would produce a combined million tons of wood pellets annually. The project is being developed by Golden State Natural Resources, which is a sub-entity of the Rural County Representatives of California. Kelly Lincoln reports.
We spoke with both Gary Graham Hughes, who is now America's Program Coordinator at the International Biofuel Watch, and with Humboldt County Supervisor Rex Bone, who sits on the GSNR, Golden State Natural Resources Board of Directors, about two pellet plants being proposed by the sub-entity of the Rural Representatives of Rural California, RCRC. Supervisor Bone is Humboldt County's representative to the RCRC. He is also a proud proponent of the region's timber and wood products economic sector. Before he was supervisor, Bone was the vice president of resource management for Evergreen Pulp Mill until it unexpectedly closed in October of 2008 due to the worldwide economic downturn. Golden State Natural Resources currently has CEQA scoping documents before the public on the proposed wood pellet project. Those documents are available on their website. If built as proposed, there would be two pellet plants, one each in Tuolumne and Lassen counties. These facilities would produce 1 million tons per year of wood pellets in a public-private partnership. The public comment period on the CEQA documents closes June 19. Supervisor Bone described the Rural Counties Agency.
Yeah, we're a lobbying group. We have lobbyists on our board. Yeah, I mean, we lobby for things that are important to rural counties, because you have to understand, all of our counties combined don't have the population that L.A. County has.
Bone said GSNR's idea for the pellet plant came as an answer to big costs in low-income rural counties caused by these devastating wildfires.
The forest resiliency and forest fires, because our counties were getting eaten up. We probably gave out $4 or $5 million over a 5-year period to counties that were in our group to get them back on their feet, to help them out.
Bone said the purpose of the pellet project is to find an economic use that would pay for removing the fire fuel from brush, slash, and millions of trees that are dying each year as a result of climate change, while also improving wildfire safety to the communities around the forests.
An estimated 36.3 million trees died in California in 2022 due to drought, high temperatures, insects, disease, overcrowded forests, according to a report from the U.S. Forest Service.
Hughes said that Biofuel Watch, which is organizing internationally against the emerging trend of converting coal plants to burning biomass, says this is a step in the wrong direction.
Now, there's no question, for instance, that we need to stop burning fossil fuels and that coal is very damaging to the climate. But wood pellets are a highly carbon-intensive, polluting, and expensive energy source. Very inefficient. Burning wood to generate electricity produces more carbon emissions at the smokestack than coal per unit of electricity. So this is really a step backwards in terms of responding to the climate crisis.
To the accusation that shipping pellets internationally to burn in place of coal will exacerbate the climate and wildfire problems in the long run, Rex said,
"If we're going to get the climate change, what we're going to try to do is get the fuels out of the forest, so we don't have these huge forest fires, which will reduce greenhouse gas emissions and atmospheric carbon, which is, I mean, they can't even catalog it all when we have a big fire like Paradise or some of these 2 million acre fires."
However, Biofuel Watch thinks the scale of the project will not benefit the health of the Northern California forests across the long lifespan of these pellet plants.
Right, the magnitude is really off the charts. 1 million tons a year of wood pellets is a lot of wood pellets, and it would require a lot of forest. So, but when it comes to feedstock, I'll have you know that the United States Forest Service, the Modoc National Forest, just noticed a little while ago a partnership for a plantation treatment project, a partnership direct with Golden State Natural Resources. So we also know that Golden State Natural Resources has said that they will take trees, basically they will take trees of every and any size that they can get their hands on. They'll take anything they can get in a 100-mile radius around each one of these two new facilities. And that's from public land and private land.
Bone only looked at the local short-term perspective in his response.
I guess we could throw stones at everything, but I mean, we've looked at this for 6 years. We have an agreement with the Forest Service. Forest Service was trying to find a way to clean up the forests because they're overgrown.
Meanwhile, Hughes suggests that the project will need to be subsidized, and then that the earnings from the infrastructure investments made by taxpayers may be moved offshore.
Biomass energy is actually very, very expensive because it's so inefficient, and there's really so little energy packed into every pound, as it were, of the wood pellets. This is a highly subsidized industry. If you take those subsidies away, This is a sector that simply is not economically viable at all. And there are some real questions as well about whether any major investors, in particular foreign investors, could end up being the interest that end up holding on to any profits. So what's in it for us?
And he accused Humboldt County of allowing Supervisor Bone to implicate it in a dirty energy scheme.
And we need to ask, what is Humboldt County doing promoting a climate suicide project like the Golden State Natural Resources wood pellet export scheme?
Bone acknowledges there will be a public-private partnership, but asked if that is different than the offshore wind project, which is also being developed by a foreign-owned company.
Like, I mean, like windmills and farmlands that they're buying. I misunderstood. There's a whole list of people that are interested in European, you know, and the European countries are looking. It's kind of a moving target right now because, like I said, we're a few years away from having the product built. We're, you know, just a few years, we're, you know, not as long of starting to stockpile, and we're even closer to building as soon as we get through the, through the permitting stage.
Meanwhile, Hughes said BioWatch has long-term concerns for the health of California forests because the economy of the forest industry lead to short-term cut rotations.
So California right now is being perceived by the global bioenergy sector as a fiber basket. And that really is a result of the, you know, degradation of our forests by extractive industry. And the fact that really they're still logging on short rotations. So a lot of the trees are really young and they're not letting them grow old. And so they're not really good for much.
And Hughes threw mud at the way GSNR is conducting its CEQA review.
Then the whole thing is like there's a conflict of interest in that the Golden State Finance Authority, that's the lead agency reviewing this project of Golden State Natural Resources, loaned Golden State Natural Resources $10 million to capitalize the project. So the lead agency actually has a financial stake in the project. It may be legal, but it's definitely a conflict of interest in terms of providing a really neutral and objective evaluation.
This is Kelly Lincoln reporting for KMUD News.
In state news, Governor Newsom hints at kidnapping charges in Florida Governor Migrant Dump. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The mysterious traffic in vulnerable humans took the form of two charter flights into Sacramento, carrying 36 asylum seekers allegedly recruited under the pretense of job promises. Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg joined religious leaders Tuesday for a news conference at Sacramento's Trinity Episcopal Cathedral.
If this is an attempt to send a message, I suppose I could say message received. But the way we're receiving the message may be different than the way whoever did this intends.
The first group of migrants, 16 people from Venezuela and Colombia, was flown into Sacramento last weekend and dropped off at the steps of the Catholic Archdiocese. Some of the migrants said they did not know where they had been sent. The second group, of 20 people, arrived Monday, also on a charter flight, at the private airport in Sacramento. Shireen Miles is a volunteer with a faith-based community organization called Sacramento ACT.
I had the opportunity to take a couple of groups out to get clothes because they had no clothes other than what they were wearing, which I presumably they've been wearing for days, if not weeks. So we went to a thrift store, and they had the opportunity to pick out a couple of outfits. One man came up to me and said, "Can I buy sandals?" "Yes, if you want sandals, get sandals."
The two migrant relocations in 3 days sparked outrage from California officials, who quickly suspected the hand of Florida Governor and Republican presidential candidate Ron DeSantis. Governor Gavin Newsom tweeted Monday, "You small, pathetic man, kidnapping charges?" While State Attorney General Rob Bonta said he's investigating the possibility of civil or criminal charges. And this is not the first time this kind of thing has happened.
Are you referring to Martha's Vineyard, Washington, D.C., New York, or Sacramento?
Attorney General Bonta spoke Monday in an interview on Sacramento television station KCRA, where he called it a moral issue.
I mean, this is black and white. those behind these actions are morally bankrupt. It is disgusting. It is reprehensible. It is unacceptable. It is the worst of who we are and who we can be. It is inhumane, cruel, callous, and it's not the way you treat fellow human beings, people, as political pawns to be weaponized, to try to score cheap political points.
By Monday, no one had taken credit for the migrant relocations, but Bonta said there was evidence that the state of Florida was behind it, including documents purportedly from the state of Florida, known vendors used by Florida, and the existence of a state program called Voluntary Transportation Program. On Tuesday, after days of silence, the DeSantis administration copped to its role, releasing a video purportedly showing happy, well-treated migrants signing waiver forms in a hotel room, dancing on a bus, and smiling in an airplane on their journey to Sacramento. A spokesperson for the Florida Division of Emergency Management said, from left-leaning mayors in El Paso, Texas, and Denver, Colorado, the relocation of those illegally crossing the United States border is not new. But suddenly, when Florida sends illegal aliens to a sanctuary city, it's false imprisonment and kidnapping. But the Sacramento advocates say the migrants are not illegally present in the United States, but are asylum seekers with the appropriate papers, awaiting scheduled court hearings, some as soon as next week. Meanwhile, the faith leaders Tuesday said four of the newly relocated migrants have already joined family members, while the others are all now housed, fed, and clothed. Reverend Julie Wakely of the Episcopal Diocese of Northern California says anyone who shows up in need is our neighbor.
Loving that neighbor means, at the very first level, meeting their basic needs. Food, shelter, clothing, comfort, and care. These, my friends, are not complicated theological ideas.
Mayor Steinberg says Sacramento will respond and send its own message to the nation and to the world.
There is only one response to this kind of evil, and that is to respond in a loving and a humane way and to do our best to grapple with and balance all of the challenges we have in our community and to say yes, and that's what we'll do.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael McCaskill. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Metz, Kelly Lincoln, and KPFA's Christopher Martinez. KMUD News is online. You can find us at KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, related documents, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from Garberville, I'm Lisa Music.